Okay, we're going. Should I tell you the song?
The song?
Yeah, no. I'll play it on my little ukulele. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, well, tonight we have Dan Hanks on, Hank on with us. On with the Sex and Horror Podcast with authors Dicey Grunner and Chantel Renee. Welcome. And we consider it an honor. You've been working all day at your tattoo shop, you said, and now you're joining us. So thank you for taking some time out to spend it with us tonight.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. And he said there was nothing off limits. So y'all know how we do. What do you have? What's on your hat? Is that Crypt Keeper? What is that?
Tales from the Crypt.
Tales from the Crypt. Okay. Yeah. Is that your favorite?
It's not my favorite. I mean, I like it. I don't know. Probably if it was kind of like old school serious shows like Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, I like it a little bit better. But I don't have a cool Twilight Zone hat, so I didn't wear it.
Well, you're an artist, so you could make one of those, right?
Actually, I probably could. But you know what? If I were to make a hat, I'd make my own hat. I don't know that I'd make like a Twilight Zone hat.
Oh, right. That'd be cool. Right.
Yeah. All right. What were the things that got you interested? Like, how long have you been drawing?
I mean, the easy answer is my whole life. I took oil painting classes when I was in fourth grade. Like, my parents sent me to that. So, and when I was in high school and I was, like, a teenage punk rocker, painted everyone's leather jackets and did all the art for the band and stuff like that.
That's pretty awesome. So, were you a punk rock kid?
Yeah, I started out, it was, like, in total white trash northern Florida. And I was, like, first I was into, like, horrible metal, like Def Leppard, A Quiet Riot and stuff. And then I heard the first, like, Metallica and Slayer and Megadeth, and that got me hooked on that. And then I heard punk rock, and when you're a teenager, punk rock really speaks to you, you know, so then I dove headfirst into that.
Nice. Did you ever get to see Gigi Allen in concert?
No. I saw there's a movie on him called Hated. It's just about all the horrible shit they did.
He was nuts.
Yeah. I don't know that I guess it, like, his band, the Murder Junkies, they're all right. But it's like, I'm not really into getting, like, feces thrown at me while I'm in the middle of watching a show. So I never wanted to go see him personally. But I've seen a ton of punk bands.
That's awesome.
Do you still go to concerts now? Or are you down in the pit? Or are you sitting in the stands?
Well, I still go to plenty of shows. I'm not in the pit. So, I mean, sometimes, like, I feel the need to get in the pit, but I like to see the bands, and I feel like, you know, when you're like, you know, a teenager and in your 20s, you know, you have to be all active to get into it, and when you're an adult, you go, oh, that was a good guitar change, oh, I like those lyrics, you know.
Nice.
Yeah, I was new to metal, so like within the last decade, so I'm kind of like in my 20s mentally when I go, so I can be in the pit right now. Yeah, I'm not full grown when it comes to music yet. I got to be out there, you know.
Well, I'm not full grown, period. Yeah. So, I thought there's this hard line in the sand, like when you get to a certain age, like all of a sudden you're an adult. No, it's not.
Yeah, forever young.
Yeah.
Do you have fur babies?
My dog, which I've always had pets growing up, and so the last dog I had, I mean, I feel like your dog is like your child.
Yeah.
So I take him everywhere with me, and he died of cancer. And, but I'm getting a new dog, actually. I'm doing a convention this weekend, and the day I come back, I come back late at night, the very next day I pick up my new dog. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Fantastic.
All right.
Yeah, I have fur babies. I always say, you love them so much when they're alive, you gotta love them through their deaths. You guys can see back here, this is my oldest. And he's over here whining. I'm like, stop whining.
There's no reason to whine. So I know people get so mad when you say that, you know, it's like you're your kid. They're like, I have real kids. I'm like, Yeah, but my kid didn't steal my car. I don't have to pay for the college, you know. Yeah. They're always happy to see me. They don't hate me, you know. I don't have to bail them out of jail. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, I have both. So I have those that I gave birth to, and I have the adopted fur baby. And they're, I mean, I treat them all like my kids, even the one that I didn't give birth to. But he's also the one jumping up on the counter, eating food that's not prepared for him. I made some turkey burgers, and they were on the grill, and my husband was supposed to come eat them, but he jumped on the counter and ate the turkey burgers. That's what I have to worry about. The baby.
Bull terriers are very, very active. They're awesome dogs, but they're very active. And I kept getting, you know, this, they're like Chinese and Japanese are called altar tables. They like look like coffee tables, but the edges curl up. You know, and they're fairly expensive, and my dog kept eating the corners of those. So I come home, and I'm like, what the fuck, really? You know.
Jeez Louise.
You know, and deal with. We'll move on from this, but I just want to say this also. I have started moving all the food off the counter, okay, making sure that there's no food. Why was I looking for my spoon, my plastic hard spoon that I used to cook with? The dog had taken my spoon and was chewing it in his crate. He jumped on the counter, took the spoon, and was eating in the spoon. Like, what can I do about that? Nothing. And he has food in his bowl.
Yeah.
You get mad at them, but then they look so distraught, you feel bad.
I would hold the spoon up. Did you do this? Who did this? He'd turn his head like.
My dog would do. He'd like cower in the corner, and I'd be like, "Critter, did you just eat my food?"
He's like, "Yeah, it was good. You did a good job on that one."
That look on their face is like,
"Yes, yeah,
like, guilty."
I'm not unhappy I ate it, but I'm happy I made you mad.
You're right. Yes, because my dog looked me dead in the face. I promise you, he looked me in the face, and he said, "It was worth it. I'll do it again." That's what he said. It was worth it.
They say, yeah, yeah. He knew they would, too.
I mean, I'm just saying this. Maybe he watches you do things, Dicey, because, you know, you do a lot of shit that you go, "It was worth it. I'll do it again."
Yes, that's what he said. He did.
Well, the thing is, bull terriers are very smart, too. Like, he figured out if I locked him in a room, how to, like, grab the knob with his paws, turn his head and get out of the room.
Oh, Lord.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, that's great. So you have to lock the doors. If you want some privacy, you have to lock the door. Uh-huh. So, Dan, was that a tat I saw in your hand? Oh, okay. So I have, so that's the inside of your palm. Okay, for those of you who are listening and not watching, he has tattoos on the inside of his palms, on his palms. How many tattoos?
Are you tattooing yourself or?
Well, one, I didn't do them myself. When you've been tattooing for a while, you know a bunch of people who tattoo, and it's way easier to have someone else tattoo you than do it yourself. They hurt really bad. The palm of your hand is not an easy area to get tattooed.
Yeah.
Because all of this is like callus tissue, so they have to punch through all the callus tissue just to deposit the ink down underneath that.
Bruh.
So what's the number? What's the ballpark? How many you have?
Oh, I don't know. I tell people I'm working on one.
So you want your whole body done?
Yeah, if my
what's that on your head?
It's like biomechanics, like machinery and like kind of Geiger influence, you know.
Very nice. I took while I was stalking your page, I saw some great artwork.
Thank you.
Yes, fantastic horror sketches. Are you sketching the work? Are you drawing?
Originally, I wanted to be a comic artist. So, like, I went to art school and I moved to New York to be a comic artist. Oh. I thought you have a lot more control that I thought you would than you really do. Like, they want you to draw superheroes. I'm like, I don't like drawing superheroes, so. So I moved into, basically I do illustrated books. I do books, and then I'll do like a bunch of drawings for the books. And that got me places because a lot of people you know, they can write, but they can't draw. So they love if you do artwork. So the minute you do artwork, they're like, oh, yeah, man, that's cool. And then they invite you to stuff. And it's kind of a mutual, like, you know, thing, like networking, whatever.
So the drawing came before the tattooing. But you've been tattooing for, like, 23 years, right?
Yeah. Well, I moved to New York City to make it as an artist. And first, as you make comic artists, and if you do Penguin Books. Penguin Books pays a lot, but, like, they give you a job pretty rarely. Like, everyone I know that does, like, book covers is really good. They also have another job, like they mm-hmm. teach or something like that. And I got into tattooing just as a way to make money off my art until I got a, quote, real job. Mm-hmm. But I liked it so much. I was like, you know, I just kind of stuck with it. And then I had my, like, 15 minutes of fame where I blew up and, like, I was getting invited to conventions in Europe and stuff. And it's worked out. Plus, it gives you the financial freedom to do whatever. Mm-hmm. So, like, right now I tattoo, like, 3 days a week. But then I'm always in the shop. I have a drawing table there. I draw and I paint and I write and stuff like that.
That's amazing. That multi-talent is amazing.
Thank you.
Chantel, I will step back for a second so you can talk, since you told me that I'm always talking and not letting you talk. So I'm going to shut up for a second. Oh, no,
it's fine. I have a dog over here that wants attention, so I'm doing good.
Look at those
eyes. No, for sure. I love that you're, and just so you guys know, you'll see these, I'll put them up on our pages, but Dan does all his covers for he's also an author, so he's a writer, so he does all his covers, and they are pretty phenomenal, so talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, like I said, an interview with DC Comics, and the interview, I'll just give you some quick highlights because it's how bad the interview went. So I get an interview with the guy who has it was called the Vertigo line, and that's where they did Swamp Thing and Hellraiser and, you know, all the stuff that I thought it's more like adult theme. They'll love my stuff. No, that's not the case. So I brought them this, like, slick portfolio I had from art school. You know, you open up as, like, middle covers and everything. And I remember the guy looking through it and he's like, yeah, this might work in art school, but let me tell you what sells. And he pulls out a Superman comic and Superman punching Lex Luthor. He goes, you want to do this? I was like, no. He's like, we don't have a job for you. Mm. Like, whoa. So then I was like, all right, well, how can I get my art out? And I love telling stories too. And when I saw the first, like, really advanced comic books, like Watchmen and Dark Knight and stuff, I was like, oh, you can do both. You know, but my idea of what you do and what they actually let you do are two different things. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, I was writing a book, and there's a guy who wrote a zombie book, but one of the main characters is a tattoo artist. So he got a hold of me just to make sure it's an accurate portrayal. It was not, but, you know, we went back and forth, and I said, you know, I'm working on my first book, so he helped me get the publisher. And I did all the illustrations for that. And, like, it just seemed natural to me that I would do, like, paint the cover and do all the illustrations and stuff. I didn't realize that apparently a lot of publishing companies don't like you to do that, because they're like, we hired you for your story. We don't know what your artwork looks like. And a lot of authors, they have, like, some friend does crappy artwork, and they're like, I want this as a cover. And they're like, yeah, no way. So as a rule, they just kind of generally turn you down. So I had to run myself by their art department and all that. But eventually I got it out. It worked out.
Mm. Wow. Which one do you, and I'm not asking you to pick, which one do you enjoy more? Because I know as an artist, you enjoy them all. But which one sells more? Like, if you're doing just the art or just your books, which one sells more?
What, my illustrations for stuff, or you mean out of my books?
Yeah, illustrations. Like, when it's just the artwork or when it's just the books.
Well, what I do now mostly is, like, I've done art for, like, compilations and, like, you know, best female paintings, and I paint, like, a zombie. Like, I did a pinup book, and my pinup was, like, a zombie girl pinup, you know? Mm-hmm. But, and I did another book called Visions of the Virgin Mary. So the Virgin Mary is like a zombie with the ruins of, like, Jerusalem behind her and stuff. Mm. So, but that stuff doesn't sell as well as, like, actually well-written books that have a theme, you know? Mm. And what I do, like, I do a lot of covers for books and covers for magazines and stuff. And like I do, if you're familiar with Splatterpunk Design, I do all the covers for them. And what Jack Bantry, the publisher, does is sends me a story that he wants to be like kind of the highlight of the issue. I'll read the story and I'll kind of figure out of that what scene should I bring to life, and then I'll do a drawing based off that.
Oh wow! So you'll read the story first and tailor it to the story.
Oh yeah, definitely. I always hated it as a kid. Like I grew up on like army base, somebody has army, so it'd be like in the middle of nowhere. But I go to the library and I like check out this huge stack of books, and I had the whole thing read within a week, and it always bugged me because a lot of times you know, especially when you're a kid, you pick a book based off the cover. And yeah. It always bugged me when the cover was not what was in the book at all.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I could think of some of those, especially some of the Harlequins that I used to read. They were pretty good on marketing, though, because it would make you want to read it, but then yeah. Get in the story.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's not in here. Interesting. And like now, go ahead.
Some of my favorite authors, or favorite artists, rather, they'll even talk about it. They'll say, I don't even read the story. Like, so basically, you're doing an awesome painting, and the story might be bullshit.
You know? Yeah. So, you know, yeah, that's very good of you. So you enjoy what you do. So you enjoy reading. So you also enjoy drawing. So it all comes together.
Right.
In this age of AI, what do you think about where we're headed there? Everybody's talking about this AI art and cover art. What do you think about that?
The thing is this. It's like I remember when I went to art school and I do like a drawing or a painting or whatever. And to me, it was just, I was just doing it as realistically as I could. And people would say, oh, I love your style. I'm like, what style? I'm just doing what I see. But it's like, I think that's kind of one of the advantages you get with traditional art is like you interpret it with your vision to like highlight what you like. And when it's AI, I think it's more like a specific agenda, and they don't like, I don't want to get like into all the technicalities and bore you, but you know, like they might not put the highlights in the right place. They might not play around with the contrast and perspective and all that stuff. And I really like to do that. Like to this day, everything I do traditionally. Like I'll draw up a sketch, even my paintings, I'll draw up a sketch on the canvas, and then I'll slowly build up in layers from there.
That's amazing. Chantel?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I 100% agree. Like I don't not like AI, but you can really see a difference when it's AI and it's hand-drawn. Like not because it's better or anything. It's just, I think you probably hit it right on the head. It's about the perspective and what you're, you know, the balance of the image that you're looking at. And you know, overall, it's a fun idea, but if you don't know where the shadows are coming from and where the brightness is supposed to be, it can throw something off.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like a lot of what people do when they do just digital art is like they pick a scene and they try and contort the scene towards the book. You know, so you don't really get to play around with like putting everything where you want it. You know, it's more like, you know, you got to pick something and then try and alter it. Whereas like, you know, I actually have the option of like adding stuff I want, taking out stuff I want, like moving stuff around, doing whatever.
Oh, we lost you, Chantel. You still there?
Yeah, I know.
I'm here. CCR. I just have a dog. I have a dog making me crazy. So I'm still here, guys.
Okay. So let me talk about what you write, the contents of what you write. So your genre is sci-fi, horror, and with the heavily political. Like you do some political horror too, stuff like that.
Well, mostly like as far as like my politics, I'm mostly libertarian. I'm mostly like just everyone leave everyone else the fuck alone. Do whatever you want. I don't care. Just, you know, leave everyone alone. So when I write, it's like usually about like oppressive governments and oppressive like corporations and, you know, whatever. But I don't really try and get into issues as much because they're not as relevant. You know, I try and get in more like, you know, what's going on at the moment. Like in my last book, The End of the World, you know, the world's falling apart. But, you know, part of it is like all these giant corporations and everything have kind of like, they've altered stuff so much that the U.S. gets fucked up. Mm. But then I always like mingle in some stuff. Like I have like their alien visitations or like creatures created by the government. And there's all sorts of nefarious plots and whatever going on. And I really like that. Like I like stuff when it has like a strong story with a lot of weird elements. Like have you seen the movie Event Horizon?
I don't think so.
It's a good movie. I check it out. But like,
it's like one of my favorites. I love that movie.
Event Horizon is good, but if you watch Event Horizon or you watch the movie Alien or you watch Pumpkinhead or something like that, something with like a strong story. So you can see it has like a sci-fi element, but I say it's more like kind of horror, like in dark fantasy than anything. And that's kind of what I like to stick to.
Okay. What something like what comes to mind for me would be like the movie Life. I think with Ryan Reynolds, where it's kind of sci-fi-ish, where there's, you know, a creature, but then also like that ending.
I think that's a pretty good movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I see. What else? How many books do you have out right now?
I have 3 books and 2 chapbooks out. The 3 books. I have the Black Seas Affinity, which is my first one they got out. Then, while I got that out, and it was like a small indie publisher, and then I was getting a bigger publisher. And in the meantime, I just kept writing stories. So then I put out a collection of my stories. Mm-hmm. And then I put out my 3rd novel, and Crossroad Press put that out. And it's kind of a sequel to my first book, but includes some of the characters from the short stories. Like, it kind of like that comic book, like it's all the same continuity, you know? Mm-hmm. We lost her again.
I think
you're
she's
not listening to me. I'm just turning the camera off so you don't have to see me getting up.
You know you're on camera, right? This is films, not just audio. Chantel?
Yes, I know.
Okay. Where's my phone? Okay, I had some notes written here. As I was stalking you earlier. Uh-oh. I came across something so controversial. Chantel, are you ready for this? I could not believe it. I said, no. Ain't no way. No, Dan Hank. No, he did not. Uh-oh. Dan did not like the Joker movie.
You mean the recent Joker movie?
Yes.
It's not that I didn't like it. It's like I didn't think that... And I don't know where you found that I didn't like it. Like maybe like on Facebook when I posted something about it. But I didn't feel like it was a accurate portrayal of the Joker. Like I really liked The Dark Knight with the Heath Ledger Joker, you know. And I felt like
I'm a comic book fan.
Yeah, I'm a comic book nerd. I probably my girl would say I'm a sci-fi nerd. Period. But you know, it's like I in my mind, you know, this is the way the Joker is. And when they keep reinventing characters and retelling them, it's like, yeah, but the reason why the character worked is you had like a good, strong story behind it. So if you're going to come up with like a new story, how about a new character?
But then it wouldn't be the Joker.
Well, but that's my point. It wasn't the Joker. It was like their version of a guy who's mentally, you know, screwed up, and he becomes like he wasn't trying to be this villain. Just society was treating him so much like shit, he eventually became a villain. That happens with a lot of people, you know. Mm. So you could have made a very strong story with him, but it's like an adult Joker meets like a very young Bruce Wayne. You know, that's not how. Like, there's a very complex story behind the Joker. Like, Alan Moore, who I think is one of the best writers ever, he wrote Watchmen. I did, like, a 6-hour writing seminar that he did, and it's really good. And he has, like, a thing called The Killing Joke. It's a story about, like, the backstory of the Joker. And, like, he was just trying to make it. He was, like, a single dad, like, a young dad. You know, he's trying to be a comedian, but he's a horrible comedian. So he ends up doing this robbery to, like, try and make some money to, like, feed his kid. And he ends up falling in a vat of like toxic chemicals. It turns him into this character of the Joker. I was like, so there's a really strong story behind it. So why do you keep reimagining it? And now it's like, oh no, but it's this guy instead. Oh no, this is what made him into that, you know?
I guess I could understand this if you're someone who has been following the comics a whole, you know, really closely, and I haven't. You know, I'm just watching the movie and connecting with it. So I watched the movie 5 times. It is one of my favorites. I absolutely love it. But I'm not, you know, I'm not attached to the comics. So that's
no, it's not a bad movie. And obviously the actor is amazing. I mean, he's amazing in every role he does, you know. And I think he did a very good job in that movie. It's just, that's not the Joker.
Yeah. Mm. And it's also like everybody's arguing about the Evil Dead right now. Some people love it, the Evil Dead rise. Some people are like, no, it's not an Evil Dead movie. It could have been something else.
I want to see that. Yeah. Evil Dead Rising, the new one.
You haven't seen that yet?
I haven't seen it yet. No. Uh-huh. I'm waiting to watch it with my girl. Like, movies I think my girl would be into, I'll watch. Like, I watched the series The Boys. I don't know if you've seen that. And my girl hates, superheroes, like anything with superheroes, she hates. I'm like, this isn't really superheroes, but she doesn't want to check it out.
They're villain superheroes. Yeah. That's why I love them.
They're the human version of what a superhero would be, because they have all the flaws of human.
I remember there was an awesome meme that said, "What America thinks is," and they chose Superman. What America really is Homelander, you know?
Right. Yeah, that is so accurate.
I think it's a great series. And I love it. It just keeps getting crazy. I'm like, I cannot believe they got away with that.
Yeah.
But, she's not really into that. So I'm like, okay. But, like, she's, like, you know, into The Mandalorian. That was awesome. She's into The Last of Us, you know? So there's a lot of stuff she's into that I'll watch with her because I know she'll enjoy it.
The Last of Us is one of my most recent watches, and I was able to watch it all the way through after HBO had already aired all the episodes, which is my favorite way to watch, because I could just binge. Have you finished watching it, Chantel? Did you ever start?
I haven't seen any of it.
No? Okay. I don't want to spoil anything then.
That's okay.
Well, I'll say one thing. It's not really a spoiler, but, like, so I was texting with this guy, and he's, like, a super, like, patriotic Trump guy. Got, like, a Grim Reaper with the American flag as a cloak. He's firing an M50. And so I have a TV in my tattoo shop, and I'll play movies. AR-15. I said, have you seen The Last of Us? He's like, no. I'm like, dude, it's awesome. You gotta watch it. So while I'm tattooing him, we're watching it, and it's like the fourth episode where it turns out one of the guys is gay. And I remember, like, you know, the whole thing, you know, is going along, he's liking everything, he's like, oh, come on. But by the end of that episode, he was like, dude, I think I'm gonna cry.
That is one of the most beautiful stories I have seen on television.
Right.
And especially in a post-apocalyptic type show. That was just a beautiful romance. I after it was over, like, I sat in the chair for a minute. It gave me Notebook. It was like Notebook in the middle of a zombie show. Right. and it just stayed with me. That was so beautiful. Yeah. You need to watch that. That one particular, the writing on that, somebody waited their whole life to write that episode. They were like, I'm about to do this.
Well, I was telling him, he's like, oh, come on. And I was like, dude, it goes through the story. Just wait. It's really good. Just wait. And then, like I said, by the end of it, you know, it really got to him, you know. So I was like, that's the power of the writing. It was good writing.
Yes.
And that's usually the case. I mean, I was talking about that tonight. I actually went and got my tattoo done. And I was talking to my tattoo artist and my friend, and I was like, you know, I think, especially with, like, splatterpunk stories, you can see a movie, or not even that, just any horror in general, when you read the book and you watch a show or a movie, it's never the same. The book is always going to be so much darker. It's going to be, like, I'll never forget the first time I read The Shining. Right. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? This is the same thing? Like, there is no way, because it's so much more creepier in the book.
Mm. Yeah, but I think Stanley Kubrick is a master. Like, I think he really, like, took that to the next level. But I agree with you. Have you seen the movie from American Psycho?
Yes.
So I read the book. It's an awesome book. And when I saw the movie, I'm like, the movie it sucks. It's nowhere near as good. I kind of like have adjusted my opinion over time because I'm like, there's no way they could get away with putting the entire book on the screen. It'd be like an X-rated movie.
Right.
Like there's one scene where he like kills a girl and then another girl. She wakes up and she's nail gunned to the floor and he comes out eating the other girl's brains out of a Tupperware container. I'm like, you cannot put that in a Hollywood movie.
I mean, come on, they just did Dumber.
Well, yeah. Standards have changed over time.
Yeah.
You know, like, I remember that when there was a lot of stuff they couldn't get away with, so.
True. Our world is not what it used to be.
Yeah, well, speaking of...
I don't know if you've seen, what's that movie? There's some movie, Serbian film.
That's one you don't forget.
Yeah, but it's just shocking. I didn't even think it was a good story.
Right.
You know, you get to the end of it, and like, have you both seen it?
I've seen it. Have you?
I have not, but it's fine. Go ahead.
Serbian film. Yeah, it's.
He's talked about it a lot.
At the end, he rapes a baby. I'm like, dude, I did not need to see that.
Yeah.
You know, it did not advance the story. You know, it just made me dislike the movie even more.
And that's what they probably were going
for. Yeah, they were going for shocking, for sure. Yeah. Like Antichrist, you know, movies like that. I went through probably about 10 years ago. I don't know how long ago it was, but I'm thinking 10 years ago because my kids were younger. I'm using them as a date to date what was going on in my life at the time. And I looked up lists of like the most shocking movies. And those were, you know, Serbian film was probably number one on most of the list that I saw. A Serbian film and Antichrist, like I said, was usually on those lists too. And that's how I also came across Martyrs.
That's an awesome movie.
Which ends up being my favorite. That ends up being my favorite. Yes.
Have you seen Inside?
Yes, Inside. Also. Irreversible is usually on this list. You haven't seen Irreversible?
No.
Yeah.
Is it good?
That's fun. Yeah, it is. It's hard. It's not as hard as Serbian film. It's hard, but it is a hard watch. You got to stay through to the end to really feel it.
Well, Martyrs is very dark, but it's a great story. I think it's a really good movie.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's like three movies in one. That's how I see it. Because there's like a first act, a second act, and a third. Like, every time you feel like you know what's about to happen.
Something else happens. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought the ending was great, too.
Yeah. It was. I always talk about that one because it was so hard. I never thought that I would watch it again because I was so emotional for like the last 20 minutes of that film. And then I went on a podcast and someone, you know, asked me to review it. And we were talking about it. So I had to watch it again because it had been so long since I watched it the first time. And I had the same emotions again, even though I know what's about to happen. I was still emotional watching it during the last 20 minutes.
I was like,
you know what? This is my favorite horror because it's so, so bad. It's awful. It's horrifying. And that's what horror is.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry about that tangent there. There was a movie. You watch a lot of horror films, right?
I watch a decent amount. Yeah.
Okay. So there was a film. I think I've asked you about it, Chantel, before. But there was a film that I've been trying to figure out. It was another one that was on one of these lists of like the absolute most horrifying, shocking scenes. That's what I wanted. That's what I was in the mood for. That's what I want to watch. And I watched all of them. But there's one that I cannot remember what it was, but I just remember people were eating poop and vomiting and eating the vomit. Now, if you've seen the film, you cannot forget that you've seen it, but I can't remember the name of it.
Was it a good movie or was it just a shock?
Oh, it was absolutely horrible. It was horrible. It was horrible, but
yeah,
I've
seen some really bad horror movies. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to know what it was, though. It bothers me. No, in terms of production and all that, I mean, I think it was intended to be serious. I think it was intended to be serious, but I would just like to be, you know, like I'm talking about it, I would like to be able to reference it like we can some of these other ones. And I can't remember what it was. And I've even done a Google search and it's not coming up. It's almost like I dreamt it.
Maybe you did.
Well, I sure hope not.
No, I'll watch this movie.
Yeah, I think a really good story can be way more horrifying than like a physical action. Yeah. You know, like, yes. Like did you see Million Dollar Baby?
Yeah.
So Million Dollar Baby is really sad at the end, but like, yeah, you know, if it just had like one shocking scene, it would be nowhere near as powerful. But you watch the movie and you really get involved with the character, and then it happens, you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it is emotional one too. Yeah.
So Dan, are you excited about Texas ArthurCon?
Yeah, no.
Be there.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I love doing like horror and writer conventions. I've done more tattoo conventions than anything. I've done like over 100, you know, all over Europe, all over South America, all over the U.S. But the horror and author conventions, you know, like I've done way less of them, so it's like they're more new and fresh to me.
That's exciting.
So is this going to be
yes? The short answer is yes.
Is this going to be your first time at Texas AuthorCon?
Texas AuthorCon. I did KillerCon, and I did Scarce the Cares. I did one in Cardiff called Scardiff. That was actually my favorite one. I like did a reading from my books, and they had a guy who like he sells exotic animals. He bought this giant snake, and I had this like snake that's like, you know, like half the size of me that I was holding, and you know, that one I really liked too.
Hmm. So they were all pretty good, because I'm just now trying to get my list together of where I'm going to go next after this and that, and I think KillerCon is at the same time as the Houston Horror Film Festival this year.
No, it's KillerCon is in August and the HorrorCon is in July. Like, I remember
We're talking about Houston Horror Film Festival.
Yeah, Houston Horror Film Festival is the same weekend. I think it's August 11th through 13th, which is the same as KillerCon, I think.
I think KillerCon is in next weekend. I'm not sure, though. Don't hold me to it.
Okay. There's something going on at the same time, because I keep looking it up. So you had a great experience at all of them, or did you like something more?
Yeah, I liked KillerCon was awesome, and like me and Jeff Strand, his wife Lynn, and a couple other people like Bridget Morgan, or Christine Morgan and Bridget Nelson. We all went to it's a Texas Chainsaw Massacre gas station. And you like you go there and like we had barbecue and they had like, you know, stuff from the movie and you know, that was cool. So KillerCon, I liked the cool atmosphere. It wasn't slamming busy, but it was busy enough and there were a lot of authors there so you could do networking and stuff. I did Scarce It Cares, and some people like Robert Essay and stuff were saying, he was saying like it's the best one I've ever done. I was so busy. But what they did this year is, I guess they had too many people, so they had a couple extra rooms they opened up, and I ended up in one of those rooms. Nobody came there. You can see, like, the tumbleweeds rolling by. Oh. But apparently, they're not going to do that next year. So, okay. I hear it's really good.
Oh, okay. Sorry you had that experience. that's awful. So if I'm hearing correctly, you don't usually do just book-centered stuff. You usually do it in a themed con or festival or something like that.
Well, now I'm doing more book-centered stuff. Mm-hmm. For a while, I was doing like tons and tons of tattoo conventions, but I also had like my like 15 minutes of fame when I was like in all the magazines and everything. Mm-hmm. And people would invite me to the convention. They're like, "We'll give you a free booth. We'll pay for your hotel room." And sometimes they'd even pay for the plane flight. And like, how do you turn that down?
Right,
you know,
that's good.
You know, I did the Britain Netherlands convention a bunch of times. It was the same thing. They're like, "We'll pay for everything. We'll, you know, pay for your dinner. We'll give you a free hotel room. Just show up."
Yeah.
I was like, so, how can I not go?
We're not trying to get you in trouble or anything. If you were single during any of this, how was the socializing?
Oh wait, I was single, so it's not going to get me in trouble.
But I said that in a PC way, right? The socializing.
Yeah,
you did great.
But I knew what you meant.
Because recently just learned all the action that's happening at these cons and festivals that we've been missing out on. So that's why we try to get in your business.
With the authors or with more like the attendees?
I mean, either
everybody.
One. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tell us the juice.
Well, I have, and I'm not just saying this because my girlfriend might hear it, but I have to think, like, if I'm with somebody, I don't cheat. Like, if you want to hook up with somebody else, break up with your girlfriend. Like, I don't have time to play this, like, bullshit. Like, I'm going to lie to you. I'm going to think you're lying to me. You know, just, it's too complicated. It's, you know, it's not good. I don't like to, you know, not tell the truth about anything. But when I was doing, when I had, like, my, quote, 15 minutes of fame, like, I was single. And, like, when you go there, because you're, you know, in all the magazines, you know, people are treating you like you're a rock star. So they're like coming up to you like, hey, man, I love your work. Hey, I'm really inspired by you. Hey, you want to go out and get dinner? You know, so it wasn't a bad scenario.
He says he's not going to kiss and tell.
He ain't going to kiss and tell. Exactly. He's not telling us about all the free tattoos he gave out for blow.
Somebody's walking around with Dan Hinks, his name tatted right here on their tit.
You know that's supposed to be bad luck. Once you get someone's name, that's it.
Yeah, I've heard. Yeah, I think it was my father-in-law that told me that, because I told him I was going to get my kids' names tattooed on me. Say, don't do that. He said that's bad luck.
Well, your kids' names would be a little bit different, because no matter what, they're always going to be your kids. But getting like your boyfriend or a husband name, that's a bad idea.
Oh, I see. Okay. You know, and apologies to your girlfriend when she listens to this. Okay. Just, you know, the joking and what we're doing right now. I got to keep saying that because I don't want you to come back and tell us to take this episode down.
She's not that uptight. Yeah.
It's happened before. So that's, we tap dance a little bit when we know someone has someone. So if you could, first, before I go on, let me address this one thing that I've noticed. You keep saying 15 minutes of fame with the quotes, 15 minutes of fame. And I know you're being modest and you want to be humble, but that was and is a great thing. You did a wonderful thing. You left a mark on people's lives. You inspired them. Your art touched them. That's not 15 minutes of fame. You earned that. You put the work in. People love the work. And it never goes away. You have left your mark. Embrace it. Own it. Be proud of it. We're proud of
you. That's very nice of you to say. But, you know, I feel like, you know, when you, like, think you're the shit, you really aren't, you know. I think you should be, you know, humble. And, I mean, it's, you know, people are fickle. And so, like, I was, for a while, I was doing cartoons for, it's called Tattoo Arts Magazine. And it was, like, an old school tattoo artist. And there was a younger guy that prints and would tell me the stories of the old school tattoo artists, and I'd turn me into like comic strips. And one, like, a guy's like collecting photos of all his stuff, and you know, the old school guy, his name was Mike Malone, he's like, why are you doing this? He's like, oh, well, you know, I just want to be famous. I want people to know who I am. And he goes, look, being top dog in the tattoo world is like being top fly on a pile of shit.
Well, you know, this also leads me to another point, though. There's always going to be somebody tearing you down, you know, right. So don't be that person. Build right. yourself, you know, be confident, be happy, be proud, because there's always going to be somebody with something negative or to say, or a naysayer. So,
right.
you know, you embrace those wins.
People know who you are, and your art definitely backs it up. My God, you have some amazing stuff on
your page. Like, I'm not kidding. The work was amazing. It's amazing what I saw on there. So, you know.
Too bad you're not going to be tattooing at the convention.
No, I'm not.
not tattooing, okay.
Do you play any music or do anything like that?
No, I have way too many hobbies as it is. So, you know, like between drawing and writing and tattooing, I also do Muay Thai and I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. You know, I just don't have time.
Yeah.
So like, what does my girl gives me shit right now. She says you do too much.
What does a typical day look like for you? Like when you wake up, what do you do? I know you mentioned that you had a long day. What does a typical day look like?
Well, I work out every day. So, like, I'll wake up and I'll work out. And then, you know, it kind of, like, I have a more flexible schedule now because I own a shop. So, like, you know, maybe I have a tattoo. So, I'll go into the tattoo. Right now, I'm working on the book. So, like, even after I'm done tattooing, I'll stay late, you know, doing drawings for the book. I mean, it really kind of depends. But I'm one of those kind of people that, I can't just, like, sit back and relax and hang out on the beach or at the bar. Like, I have to do stuff.
I see. You know, there was something also when I was stalking your page earlier that I came across. I got to pull it up because I thought it was interesting. I wanted to talk about it a little bit. Someone, and I won't say their name because I don't have their permission, but this was on Facebook. They said, do you have advice for freeing your mind of past trauma through art? And you said, I don't look at it like that, so I'm probably not the guy to ask. I've had plenty of trauma in my life, but art was a mainstay long before any of the trauma. It does help to have a focus, building a car, writing books, doing art, something that you can concentrate on that makes anything else less relevant.
Right.
Can you expand on that? Expand on that. I thought that was the quote in and of itself, you know, is, you know, it's relatable. It's like, I get it. I understand what you're saying. So it's to me, it's a profound way to look at art and our putting ourselves and our souls into what we're doing.
Well, I look at it as like when you have like, I think of them as hiccups, you know, like I had brain cancer, but that was a hiccup in what I wanted to do. And like my wife died in a hit and run, you know, and like those are very traumatic events. But if you let that fuck you up for the rest of your life, then the only one that cares if you make it or not is you. End of the day, that's the only one that cares. So I'm like, you know, that sucks. I'm not going to let it stop me. So like when I had cancer and I was going through chemotherapy and radiation and all that stuff, I was still going to the gym 3 times a week. You know, I was still working at the tattoo shop. And I was going to I was getting chemotherapy and it was downtown Manhattan. So I would bicycle there. Like I lived in Williamsburg, I'd bike over the ridge, I'd bike there. And I remember the doctor would be like, "Did you bike here?" I'm like, "Yeah." And like I'd stop on you know the bridge and I'd throw up over the side, but I'd bike there. I'm like, you can't give up. You can't let it beat you. Like, so whatever happens, you know, don't let that be the end of it. Because like you said, nobody except for you really cares. Like your family might care a little bit, the people that you know might care, but you know, 100 years from now, nobody's gonna care if you didn't do anything.
Yeah,
that's actually really great advice, I think.
Yeah, I hope people will listen to that.
And I think people need to understand when you're saying that, you're not saying it's not important. No, it's as important as you are making it, is right. What I'm getting from that, you know?
No, I'm definitely not putting it down. I mean, you know, like, it definitely was not a good thing I had cancer. It was not a good thing that my wife died, you know? If you had somebody close to you die, you had cancer, then that might have dramatically affected you. And I'm not trying to take that away from you. I'm just saying, don't let that be the end.
Definitely a lot more can come from it. And I always say, all experiences, good or bad, are good experiences when you're a writer or a creator of any kind, because you utilize that energy and that vibration to go and put it into what you do and what you're creating. And that's what art is supposed to be. When you go, you know, a lot of people don't know what art is for, or reading or listen to music. The point is that you are able to experience that communication, whatever it is, try to pick it up from that artist, whether it's drawing, music, or even reading or watching a movie. You the idea of it is that that's the human experience we're sharing with each other, our vibrations and our creations with each other. And I think if you can open your mind to that, you will be better for it. I mean, I don't go into any movie with a concept that I'm going to hate this shit. You know what I mean? I saw that Infinity Pool. You remember that movie that came out a few months back?
No, what was it?
Infinity Pool. It's with
No, I didn't see it.
The Skarsgård guy that played in True Blood.
Okay.
Really fucking weird ass movie. But you know what? Yeah. I went in and I was like, I'm gonna experience this and see what it is. And it actually was fairly enjoyable. For some reason, it reminded me a lot of Kubrick. But anyway, it was pretty cool. But yeah, because we're coming down to a close, I don't want to take away what Dicey was going to talk about, but I definitely want you to let people know about your new anthology coming out.
Okay. It's because I do all these illustrations for like books and magazines and stuff. I was like, it'd be great if I put out an anthology. And I remember I originally talked to a couple of publishers. It was like, yeah, man, I'm putting all this out maybe next year, or, you know, yeah, I've ceased publishing for a while. Things are going really badly right now. So, like, I'll do it myself, you know. And I do that podcast where I interview people, and, like, some people I interviewed, like, well, you know, I use this, I use that. So I started, like, running through the the connections and everything, and realized I could do it myself. And I got a couple people to help me, you know, with, like, all the social media and the editing and all that sort of stuff. And so I said, but I'll bet I can get the authors and then I'll do all the illustrations. So we have that down. So with the authors, you know, what I said is a lot of people I reached out to and I said, hey, I will give you an original piece of artwork that I did for one of your stories if you'll give me a new short story for my anthology. Mm-hmm. And pretty much everybody seemed to be down with that. The only people that weren't said, you know, hey, I'm in the middle of something, I just don't have time. But I had some, you know, some no names, some fairly big names in the indie circuit that did short stories. So in total, I have 15 stories total that go into the book. And I drew a little illustration of each one. I'm doing like a little caricature of each author for like the author's page. And, you know, hopefully it'll be a great thing. You know, I'm pretty excited about it right now. It's called The Never Dead. And hopefully, I'm doing SoCoolCon next month, and hopefully it'll be out by then.
Nice. Very nice. Sounds congratulations. Awesome. Yeah.
Thank you.
Congrats.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be out in June?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, nice. It'll be out in June. I can't say exactly what day. Like, I was hoping the end of May, but it's like I'm doing so many illustrations, mm-hmm. and I had to wait so many. Like, everybody... Fortunately, authors are a lot quicker than tattoo artists. Tattoo artists are the worst as far as, like, you know, drag shit out and all that stuff. And, you know, they can be deadlines. They promise you stuff and then it never arrives. Authors are quite a bit better. But it took a while to get everything together. And, you know, as I'm going along, I'm like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if I did this? I'm like, oh, that's, you know, a bunch of more work. I'm like, okay, but I'll do it. You know, it's like, I feel like if you don't try your hardest, you know, what's the point?
Yeah. You know, I can't get it out. Where do you think your drive comes from?
My parents they're very conservative, very religious. My dad's lifelong military, like he's been in every war from Vietnam to the first Gulf War. And so everything that I've been into, I've had to fight really hard for. Like, mm-hmm. I remember I had, like, the Axl Rose haircut, like, long hair in the back, you know, bangs in the front. And I remember mullet. My dad chasing me. Well, it wasn't quite a mullet because the sides weren't shaved. Okay. I remember my dad chasing me around the house with scissors trying to cut my hair because it was inappropriate. You know, it's like, I feel like pretty much everything that I did, like, and I was super punk rock. But in Virginia, back in the early 90s, when it was not cool to look like that, like you'd have green hair and, you know, people would drive by and pick up a truck and be like, hey, faggot! You know, like I got my ass kicked so many times, which is part of why I got into martial arts, because I was like, I'm tired of getting my ass kicked. But, I just feel like you have to fight for, like, if you want to do anything, you have to fight for it. That's been my whole kind of life experience. you know, sometimes it's kind of bad because you like jump to the shark, you know, when you should have laid back and maybe it wasn't meant quite as, you know, harshly as you took it, but you know.
Right. You're always on guard.
Yeah, yeah.
For the next battle. Yeah, I get it. I remember someone likened me to always having one tool in my toolbox, and it was a hammer.
Everything's a nail, right?
Yeah. They were like, you need to have more tools in your toolbox. If you just got a hammer, then you're just going to destroy everything. You're just going to hack it up. And so I can see how that, I can see what you're saying there. But what do we do? I mean, it's a trauma response, right?
It might be. Like, I hate to do that because I don't want to be like, oh, poor me. You know?
Yeah, yeah. But,
you know, and I really don't like people would be like, you know, with cancer, like, oh, do you want to go to a group where you just, I'm like, no, why do I want to talk with other people about how miserable I am or they are? Like, if I feel miserable, that's for me. I don't want to share with other people. You know, I'll just deal with it myself. Well, we're all going to like, you know, hold hands and go, oh yeah, I feel like shit. You know, no.
Is that where the tattoos come in? Is that part of your therapy, the tattoo therapy? And I realize you're releasing it also through the art, but I wonder if, you know, you're getting these pain. This is pain, you know. I know because I get them too.
I wouldn't say it was that direct of a connection. Like, I remember you see, like, Mike Ness from Social Distortion and stuff, all covered in tattoos as a little kid. I was like, I want to look like that, you know, especially, like, you know, when I lived like in Virginia and stuff, and everybody's like very straight laced, very bro, you know, I'm like, I do not want to look like that at all. You know, so, you know, nice. I kind of had a vision of what I wanted to be, you know, and I wanted to get tattoos. It wasn't necessarily that I like this is directly related to cancer though. So after I had radiation, like there are spots in my head where hair just doesn't grow. Like, mm-hmm. You ever saw the Class of Nukem High, the movie?
Mm-hmm.
Like radiation gets in the groundwater and the drinking water and, like, patches of hair falling out.
Right.
Well, my hair looks like that, like, if I grow my hair out. Like, there are patches where hair just doesn't grow. And so I was like, fuck it, I'll shave my head to get tattooed.
Yeah. You
know? So that's what I did. So, like, it wasn't, like, getting tattooed. I was thinking of chemotherapy. It was just more like, yeah, well, you know, now I'm going to do this because, you know, that's the best I can do to make up for it.
Makes sense. But that's turning pain to power. That's what I call that.
Well, there is such a thing. There is such a thing, too, that they're doing now that's like the blacking tattoos.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Like where they try to hurt people and, like, you know, they're proud of how much it hurts. It's like, I'm not into that, you know.
It's
like,
yeah, it's supposed to take them to like a
sucks,
different.
But I love the picture, so you know.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a different spiritual, kind of like when you hang yourself from.
I know a lot of people do that, like the hangings, and you know, little like have like
auto asphyxiation.
Yeah, well, that's a little different because that's a sexual thing. But I'm talking about like, you know. When people do like the hanging from hooks and swinging and stuff
like
that. Yeah,
they put hooks through their chest flesh.
Yeah, but I'm not really like, I know people who do that. I've been in the tattoo scene for 23 years, so I know plenty of people that do that. But I'm not into that personally.
I gotcha.
For anybody who's been watching this video, if you have not watched me with these animals and understand why we think these animals are like our children, they have not stopped this whole time.
So, Dan, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us. It's been a pleasure. I can't wait to meet you at Texas AuthorCon July 14th and 15th in Dallas, Texas. Can you tell everybody where they can find you and your work and how they can stay in touch?
Yeah, probably the best is my website is danhink.com, and then I'm on Facebook as DeadGuyLLC. That's my, like, I incorporated, you know, and that's my company, Dead Guy LLC. So Facebook, I'm also on Instagram, Dead Guy LLC. I actually had Dan Hink, and somebody hacked in and stole my Instagram, which really sucks. They had like 17,000 followers on Instagram, you know. But so then I reinitiated it as like Dead Guy LLC.
Mm-hmm. That really sucks. They try to basically hold your stuff hostage.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't even offer it back to me. It's like it was a Russian hacker, and I knew that from the email contact they changed it to. But it's like basically they go, hey, do you want an account with 17,000 followers? We'll sell to you. Like some lady in Russia was just posting like modeling pictures of her. And like people were like complaining to Instagram going, this is not Dan. And finally Instagram just took it down, but they didn't give it back to me.
Okay.
Sucks.
All right. Well,
we can't wait to meet you in person.
Thank you.
All right. Then.
Thanks for your time.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. Thanks for having me. Buy my book. Everyone buy my book.
Yes.
Buy Dan's book. And also look out for the anthology coming out next month.
Yeah. They Never Did. Yeah. It'll be out. And hopefully it'll look awesome. I project it'll look awesome. I'm sure my unbiased review, I say it'll look awesome.
Yeah. I'm positive it will, based on you doing the illustrations also. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Good night.
All right. Good night, everyone.